The clerk will call the next case.
Alexandria City Public Schools et al. Versus Handel. Michael Bliley, Andrew Alexander, Appellant's Counsel. Julie Hyden, M. Tom McWeeny, Appellee's Counsel. If the IT department can please bring over Mr. Bliley and Mr. McWeeny. Approximately 30 seconds, Your Honor. Mr. Chief Justice, the parties are ready to begin.
All right, Mr. Bliley, are you going to argue this case on behalf of the appellant?
Yes, Your Honor.
All right, you may proceed.
Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the court. Mike Bliley here on behalf of the appellant, Alexandria City Public Schools. I would like to reserve 4 minutes of time for rebuttal.
All right.
Your Honors, this case turns on what is a fundamental question in workers' compensation law, and that is, how do we define an injury under the Act? Decades of case law from this court all the way through down to the commission have adopted the definition that an injury is a mechanical or structural change to a body part. Therefore, the Court of Appeals fundamentally misunderstood the compensability framework when it interpreted the phrase solely as a condition for proving an accident. Your Honors, the phrase injury by accident is a term of art in the workers' compensation world, but it's a phrase that clearly breaks down into two distinct parts, injury and accident. Surely you can imagine an injury that does not result from an accident, and just as easily you can imagine an accident that does not result in an injury. But if you look at the text of many decisions of this court and the lower courts, it becomes clear that these mechanical or structural change language has operated solely as a stand-in definition for injury, and the remaining elements speak to whether or not that mechanical or structural change occurred by accident. This historical definition has been accepted by the commission and the workers' compensation bar alike, as well as the General Assembly. But the Court of Appeals, with one stroke of the pen, has completely removed the historically accepted definition of injury, which is one of the fundamental cornerstones of workers' compensation cases. If this opinion is left standing, Your Honors, we now have no clarification as to what constitutes an injury. It leaves something of a black hole in workers' comp jurisprudence when we don't know what an injury is. And that's why that untenable void needs this court's correction. Interpreting a sudden structural and mechanical change only as describing an accident rather as a definition for injury, it's not just illogical, but it extends the Act's provisions beyond what the General Assembly intended. To pragmatically frame the whole situation, I do think it's helpful to describe the process by which a claimant seeks benefits. There's a claim for benefits form, and one of the blocks in that form asks them to list all of the body parts that they are claiming injuries to. It goes to a hearing. The deputy commissioner will decide whether or not the event itself is compensable under the Workers' Compensation Act, and there's a number of things that would make it not compensable if it wasn't arising out of the accident, if it didn't occur in the course of the accident, etc. But then, if when they issue their opinion, they hold that the incident was compensable, the next step for them is to decide whether or not the injuries alleged are tied into that accident, and thus whether they the claimant should be entitled to lifetime medical benefits for each body part. Of course, the deputy commissioner can decide that, say, the back is compensable, but the right hand isn't. And it's very easy to imagine situations where that would happen. But where the Court of Appeals erred was they determined that the claimant's burden of proof is only to prove an injury by accident. And then, once they prove the accident, that all of the little injuries come in after that fact. And that's just flipping the analysis completely on its head. When a claimant files a claim for benefits for the neck and the shoulder and the hip and the ankle, in effect, their burden of proof requires them to prove an injury by accident to the neck and an injury by accident to the shoulder and an injury by accident to the hip. And the fact that they all arise out of the same incident doesn't change the claimant's burden of proof that she must prove an injury by accident to each body part. And part of that analysis is whether she has suffered a structural or mechanical change to that body part. I do briefly want to touch on the facts of the case itself, not just for the second assignment of error, but because I think it perfectly encapsulates the danger of what we have with this Court of Appeals decision. The claimant counsel, suffered counsel, a fall. She landed on the right counsel, side of her body. Yes,
counsel. This is Justice Mims. Before you enter into that argument, let me just ask you a question about your second assignment of error.
Yes, sir.
Your second assignment of error indicates that you are arguing as a matter of law rather than that the evidence was insufficient to find any shoulder injury at all, as a matter of fact. So before you get into the factual arguments, tell me if your assignment of error is sufficient to allow you to do so.
And I believe it is, Your Honor. And it is a mixed question of fact and law when we're looking at what the Court of Appeals has given us, because the circular logic that's been adopted by the Court of Appeals is once a claimant proves an injury by accident, then all injuries are included. And the reason why that's fallacious reasoning is because now we don't know what an injury is. So when we say that that the claimant didn't suffer an injury in this case, the second amendment or the second assignment of error rather speaks to, frankly, either analysis. Even if this court were to uphold the new definition, or I would argue the lack of definition of injury, there's no evidence in the record whatsoever to say that she suffered a shoulder injury, because the commission has widely held that pain is without more is not compensable. And that's exactly what happened in this case. She fell on her right side, and when she presented to the hospital on day one, she says, "I have right shoulder pain." They did imaging. Everything came out completely normal. When she goes back to the hospital 5 days later, there's still lingering pain. It's mostly focused on the neck and the hip, but there was shoulder pain. And that's the last mention of shoulder pain we get. There was never any further treatment for the shoulder. She never complained about the shoulder in the next few months' worth of treatment. And essentially, that's exactly what we're looking at here, which is there's just no evidence whatsoever to say that she suffered a right shoulder injury. And because pain is not compensable, and because the even under the Court of Appeals' new reasoning requires an injury, she didn't suffer an injury of any kind whatsoever.
Counsel, this is Justice McCullough. I'd like to ask you this. You seize on this language from the Court of Appeals opinion, endeavoring to synthesize or whatever, from your perspective, change the law. But before any of that, the deputy commissioner and the commission unanimously upheld the award of benefits. So even if you're right that the Court of Appeals had some stray language, we need to fix that, does that still mean you win? Because the if we sort of go back to what the commission was doing, they found it was compensable. Help me with that.
And I understand that, Your Honor, and I wish I had an answer for that as well. I will say that it doesn't look like either one really gave analysis on the shoulder. Both the deputy commissioner and the full commission, it was about a paragraph each on the shoulder, and it didn't really address the fact that she only complained for 6 days and then there's nothing else. And I think that was just erroneous. It was just a misunderstanding of the facts in this case, because the way that I look at it, with no imaging, with no diagnosis, with no further treatment beyond 6 days, all we have is transient pain, and that's not a shoulder injury, both because there was no structural or mechanical change in the body and otherwise. One of the things that I think is important to understand is that she suffered a neck injury in this accident, for instance. And if a claimant suffers a neck injury and that manifests itself in pain that radiates to the right shoulder, that's not a right shoulder injury, that is a neck injury. and she shouldn't be entitled to benefits, lifetime medical benefits for the right shoulder, because the neck injury is manifesting itself in pain that runs through to the shoulder. So as far as the deputy commissioner and the full commission, I would simply urge your honors to look at the analysis that was given in that section of the opinion, and they just kind of gave short shrift to it entirely and didn't properly analyze it based on the facts. And if there aren't any further questions.
Counsel?
Yes, Your Honor.
Hi, this is Justice Goodwin. I mean, is your argument that there's no evidence to support the findings of the deputy commissioner and the commission concerning the shoulder injury?
With regards to that, and again, that's under either analysis, whether you reverse and accept the fact that an injury is defined as a mechanical or structural change, there was clearly no mechanical or structural change. If you accept the Court of Appeals argument and say simply that an injury by accident must be proven, and then the claimant is entitled to benefits for each injury, there was still no injury it was only pain, it was transient pain, and it was gone within 2 weeks. So. Okay. If there aren't any further questions at this time, I will reserve my remaining time for rebuttal and cede the virtual lectern to my colleague.
Please, Court. I'd like to reserve I'd like to reserve 5 minutes, please.
Well, you don't get to reserve time.
Okay, sorry. I think that the ultimate issue in this case needs to be addressed first, and that's not necessarily what a definition of an injury is. It's whether the commission should retain jurisdiction as to future disputes on medical treatment to the claimant's right shoulder in this case. The full commission, which was affirmed by the Court of Appeals, found that there was sufficient facts established in the record to prove that the claimant did suffer a quote-unquote injury to the shoulder, based upon the fact that she complained of shoulder pain and also the testimony that she fell to her entire right side. I believe that those factual findings are binding on appeal. The entire analysis in the history of whether an injury by
counsel,
accident.
Counsel, this is Justice Goodwin. Are those findings binding on appeal if there's no evidence to support them?
No, not if there's no evidence. But in this case, there is evidence. The plaintiff or claimant did testify that she fell to her entire right side. And then the medical records support that the right shoulder pain was being complained to throughout the beginning of treatment. And I referenced in my brief the places within the medical records where the claimant indicated shoulder pain as a result of her fall. So
evidence of a sudden mechanical and structural change to her shoulder?
I'm sorry, what was the question?
How is that evidence of a sudden mechanical and structural change to her shoulder? The evidence that you just discussed, the pain that she had.
The elements of a mechanical or structural change did not require a diagnosis, right? And that's where I believe that the carriers and employers have been trying to push the law for quite some time, is establishing that there needs to be some diagnosis of what caused the pain in order for it to be compensable under the Act. In fact, that often doesn't happen. Most work-related injuries actually do resolve themselves after minimal treatment. If you can imagine that there's an incident which results in neck pain and the claimant receives treatment at the hospital for neck pain and perhaps one or two follow-up visits with the doctor before it fully resolves. To say that there was no diagnosis of what caused the neck pain would mean that the claimant is thereby responsible for that hospital visit charge and the follow-up visits with the treating physician for neck pain. The mechanical or structural change, is in the case law referring to a sudden mechanical or structural change, right? And you got to look way back to the history of, what the cases were about that were analyzing the issue, which brought that to be an element, to see that, historically there were only two kinds of injuries, right? There were internal injuries and two kinds of accidents, internal accidents and external accidents. And the external accidents never really were part of appeals, right? That would be an instance where there's an explosion, you're struck by somebody else. There's just elements of the work environment that directly cause a quote-unquote injury. And the other were the internal accidents where somebody's just doing their job. In either case, when somebody's just doing their job, it is an element to prove a sudden mechanical or structural change, either by usual exertion, right? You have to show that something internally happened, a derangement resulted from a sudden event. Or in an unusual exertion, you still have to establish that it's not the result of cumulative trauma. Right, and that's where
Counsel, may I interrupt you just for a moment, because I wanted to guess what I think are the issues in this case. The Court of Appeals said that a proof of a sudden mechanical structural change in every body part for which she seeks compensation is no longer necessary. Court of Appeals held that proof of sudden mechanical or structural change to one body part listed in the claim for benefits establishes an injury by accident under the code and allows compensation benefits for other body parts allegedly affected by the accident. Now, that's why you're here, all right? Is that the proper law in the Commonwealth when it comes to compensation? That proof of structural change in one body part allows compensation for accidents, injuries, whatever occurred to other body parts?
Well, it is, in the way that they phrased it, and it's important, it's injuries caused by that accident, right? So if the injuries are proven to be causally connected specifically to that sudden precipitating event, which caused at least one injury, right? That proves that the incident or accident itself was compensable. Causation is then therefore the only thing that needs to be proven. Right.
Yeah, but counsel, this is Justice Kelsey. If I may interrupt you for a second, what the chief's question is getting at is the synthesis that the Court of Appeals gave was very broad, because if it were true, as the Court of Appeals stated it, a worker could have his finger cut off and experience extreme pain from the tips of his toes to the top of his head. I mean, real pain. And have a headache for 5 days, and he's going to have body part meds for the rest of his life from the tip of his toes to the top of his head. So there's got to be a limiting principle to what the Court of Appeals said, and it sounds like you're not coming up with one.
No, I mean, let's say if in this hypothetical scenario, there was a list of every body part imaginable, right? Even if the Court of Appeals were to find that there was sufficient causal connection between all of this pain throughout the body parts, right? The question of whether or not the lifetime award for these body parts is the employer's responsibility is still going to come down to the issue of causation. Once you establish, that's the key. Is the treatment for these body parts causally connected to the injury? There are instances, in fact,
with this point, why wouldn't the right analysis be somewhat similar to what I'm implying or inferring rather from the from the Workers' Comp Commission, because they did not hold that the mechanical and structural change doctrine has been changed. That's not what they said. They seem to flat out say, look, she fell on her right side. She claimed she had an injury to her right ankle, her right knee, her right hip, her right shoulder, her right neck, and her right back. And there was fairly contemporaneous diagnostic evidence that she did, in fact, have injuries, which would imply pretty strongly, at least to a fact finder, that the pain was not coming from outside into the body part, but the neurological condition of the body part was, in fact, structurally changed enough to produce pain. So that makes sense. That's a reasonable factual judgment call by a fact finder. But what I'm struggling with is the chief's question to you, which is eliminating structural and mechanical, which requires the pain to come from the body part's injury, as opposed to a symptomatic pain that's coming up to the top of your head because you just got your finger cut off. So that's the question that I'm struggling with, that I think the other judges are asking about. What is the limiting principle of the Court of Appeals decision?
When you're listing body parts in a claim for benefits, you're saying that there's an injury and treatment required for a specific area of the body causally related to the accident. If it later turns out that there's a different source for that pain in the shoulder, for instance, you later find out after a shoulder injury, beyond the statute of limitations, that the pain in the shoulder has actually been coming from the neck all along. The treatment for the neck would still be covered if it's to alleviate shoulder pain.
True, but the treatment would not cover the shoulder pain.
Specifically,
the treatment would not cover the shoulder pain, though. The treatment would cover the neck, and the compensable consequence would be the shoulder pain. But without a finding that the shoulder had inflammation or neurological trauma of some kind, you wouldn't get independent shoulder pain treatment. So, for example, using your exact hypothetical, if the neck resolved itself 100% and there's no symptomatic pain radiation whatsoever, you still wouldn't get continuing shoulder pain treatment unless the pain was coming from anatomical change within the shoulder. You follow me?
I think I do, but what I'm saying in terms of the case, and forgive me because I don't have the site, but where you have a compensable shoulder injury awarded, and then beyond the statute of limitations, it's the opinion of the doctor that there actually never was a shoulder injury, it was always a neck injury, even if you were to seek treatment for the other shoulder, right, for the same neck, that wouldn't be covered. It would only be covered to the extent that you're treating the pain in the shoulder that was awarded. Does that make any sense, the distinguishing?
It does, but the pain to the shoulder has got to be caused by an anatomical structural change, inflammation, neurological trauma. We're not talking about getting hit with bricks. It's anything that happens in the body itself. It's mm-hmm. got to come from that body part. That creates the injury to the body part. Of course you get symptomatic treatment with all meds. What I'm trying to get at is it looks like the Comp Commission did a okay enough job to say, look, there's a pretty strong inference that there was inflammation or radiating pain coming from the shoulder because she fell on her shoulder. That's not a out there ruling. That's a fact finder ruling. The Court of Appeals took the doctrine and changed the doctrine, and that's the part I'm struggling with.
Well, what the Court of Appeals was trying to dispel is the notion that a structural or mechanical change requires some element of diagnosis to establish what caused pain. I mean, there is a structural mechanical change in the brain whenever you feel pain. The question is, what is the source of that pain? Where is it coming from? And if the pain is coming from the shoulder and the feeling is that the shoulder pain is the result of not cumulative trauma, but what's been established as a compensable event, right? Then that causal connection alone is enough to award benefits to the shoulder, even though you don't know why the shoulder hurts, You don't need to establish why the shoulder hurts if you can establish that it was a compensable injury, it was not cumulative, and it's stemming from that incident. So the mechanical or structural change is not an element of proof. You just, and that's what they're trying to do on the appellant side. The appellants are trying to establish that a claimant must prove that there was some material structural change within the body in order for it to ever be awarded.
Why isn't it easy enough to say, no, it has to be proved, but it's not that hard to prove it. You fall on your right shoulder and it hurts. It's probably, it's a 51% probability you're getting inflammation in your shoulder. You may even be tearing your rotator cuff. You may be doing a lot of things. You may have trauma and bruising, of course. But so I don't know that you're answering the problem, which is if we take the literal argument that structural and mechanical change is not doctrinally relevant to determining the scope of the injury, then I think my absurd hypothetical still stands, which is I cut my finger off in the factory, and I feel pain up and down my entire body. So my entire body now is subject to having an injury, as opposed to losing my finger, just because I have radiating pain.
Only if you establish causation. You still have to establish causation.
I didn't have radiating pain before I had my finger cut off.
What's
that? I have my finger cut off. Now I have radiating pain from the top of my head to the bottom of my feet. There's causation.
Right. Well, I mean, this again comes to the issue of, where the court has previously ruled in Testerman that, diagnosis is not an element of proof, even though it's often necessary, right? Oftentimes it's necessary in order to establish an injury of what exactly the diagnosis is. But sometimes that's going to be impossible. For instance, in this case, because the only treatment initially was to get an x-ray and then an injection and a little bit of complaints throughout the beginning, it's not clear exactly what the initial injury was, whether or not the treatment later, right, in 2016 is connected to that quote-unquote shoulder pain, which was caused by the fall itself. That's going to be another causation question. Am I answering the question?
All right. Your time has expired. Justice Kelsey, did he answer your question?
He did. Thank you very much.
All right. Your time has expired. Rebuttal, Mr. Bliley?
Yes, Your Honor. I want to focus on the law, because I agree with Your Honors that I think that really is why we're here. I want to make 100% clear that the appellant's argument is not that a diagnosis is necessary for an award. That's not our argument. You got to prove something. And when we have a situation like this one, where there's just transient pain and then it goes away, or as Justice Kelsey mentioned, it's neck pain or a neck injury that radiates to the shoulder. It's one thing to say that you don't need a diagnosis and anything can just be awarded, but to say that a structural mechanical change is only required for one body part and then other injuries get included, it just flips the claimant's burden of proof on those subsequent injuries.
Okay, counsel, this is Justice Mims again.
Yes, sir.
I understand that argument, and that is, in fact, an argument on the law, which is what your assignment of error indicated you were going to make, that you disagree with the law as expressed in the Court of Appeals opinion. And the multiple questions to your opposing counsel indicate that we are struggling with that issue as well. But in this particular case, where there was a fall on the right side, where it's very obvious that there was an injury by accident that occurred because of that fall, and you've got pain I don't recall every single instance, but you've got pain in the foot, the knee, the hip, the shoulder, etc. why is, when we go back to the factual record in front of the Workers' Compensation Commission, what more could this claimant have done to say, hey, I've got literally pain up and down my right side, and I've identified exactly where it is, and the commission accepted that as a matter of fact. Where in the record are the countervailing facts that would indicate, no, everything else is okay, but the shoulder is not?
And I think the confounding factor is the injury to the neck, Your Honor. When a traumatic event happens to the entire right side of one's body, it's natural that soreness would develop and that pain would, just because a hip is injured, it's going to be radiating elsewhere. And I do think that the neck injury, that is where the shoulder pain is explained away, and where even in scenarios where a diagnosis isn't necessary to prove an injury to the shoulder, the fact that you have an injury so close there, a genuine injury, it's genuine structural and mechanical change to the body, the fact that she complained of shoulder pain on day one and on day five, that's where that explanation comes from.
Counsel, if a plaintiff comes into court and says, I fell down on my right shoulder and it really, really hurts, can't a fact finder say, you probably had swelling, you might have had something worse? Well, yeah, something happened to your right shoulder. Isn't that a permissible fact-finding judgment call? And doesn't that judgment call presuppose that there is, in fact, a mechanical structural change? Swelling itself is a mechanical or structural change.
And Your Honor, and I understand, if this pain lasted 3-4 weeks, or if one of the subsequent and immediate presentations to the hospital, the shoulder was the focus and said, hey, I fell a week and a half, 2 weeks ago, and my right shoulder is still not feeling right. I think that's the scenario where you start looking into whether or not an injury occurred, even if there is not a substantive diagnosis.
Now, counsel, in this instance, I mean, this particular claimant had an injection to the shoulder. So perhaps that is what alleviated the pain, but nonetheless, there would have been an injury. Is that correct?
Perhaps it is, Your Honor, and I do understand that. When a claimant presents to the hospital, they're surely complaining of multiple things, and there are multiple different things that the doctors will try to see if this was the issue. And again, I just don't see that as enough to qualify as an injury under the Act.
You know, the problem is for many of us in this case, the problem is, I think, what Justice Mims just isolated. I read this record, and if somebody says that was an obvious sudden mechanical or structural change in the body that caused that reason for the shots and all the other things that you suffer, I don't think anybody would quarrel with that. But the problem is the Court of Appeals has come up with a brand new way of expressing what is compensable by saying that you can have a compensable incident for something that is not an obvious sudden mechanical or structural change in the body. And because there's this one or more body part that has been affected with a structural change, the injury has to arise by accident. We got that. Any question in anybody's mind? The identified incident is reasonably demonstrated at a definite time. We got that. The problem is the Court of Appeals now says that you don't have to connect the obvious sudden mechanical or structural change in the body. You don't have to connect it to something that is another body part. Now, could they have done that in this case? I think Justice Mims, when he went through some of the things that are in the record, sure sounds like it might have been a structural, obvious structural, mechanical structural change to the body. Sounds like that to me. But the record doesn't demonstrate that in terms of somebody saying that. This is what this is. And then the Court of Appeals said, well, it doesn't matter. you know, you got an injury to your foot. Yeah, we'll take care of that too, because you have an obvious structural pain to your thigh bone that happened roughly at the same time. That's why you're here.
And that's
we've
why
never had the law expressed like that before.
Correct. And that's why I would ask this court to remand to the Court of Appeals to apply the correct structural or mechanical change analysis on this case.
Well, the dilemma is that if you look at this case, it sure would have been easy to do, wouldn't it, at the commission?
That may
it
be
sure
wrong.
Would have been easy to do with a deputy commissioner, with the full commission. Sure would have been easy, don't you think?
It would. I see I'm past my time, if I could very briefly respond. And I think that's why that's why it's so fascinating that the argument that has been now adopted by the Court of Appeals has never been adopted by the commission, by the Court of Appeals before. It hasn't been argued. I think it's just a misunderstanding of the law on that front.
Well, perhaps that's the case. We have to take the cases that we get, unfortunately. But I must admit, you know, Justice Mims recites all of these things, and I look at the case and it looks pretty good to me. It looks pretty good to me. Where on earth did the commission come up with the idea that you can have an injury that is an obvious sudden mechanical or structural change of your foot, of something like that, and it can satisfy for a compensable claim to your elbow? That's basically what they're saying in their opinion, and I find that that's incorrect. But I also look at this case and I find on the facts, it sure would have been easy to find that shoulder was a part of this. But I don't see that they did it. They've now got a rule of law that affects other cases out there that, at least for me, I think is wrong.
And it has been already affecting cases, Your Honor, since Handel was decided.
All right. Well, sorry to take up all of your rebuttal time, but your time is now expired. All right.
Thanks. Appreciate it.
All right.